Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." We as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the home page, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And then the TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream. I mean, with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media is there also. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening and interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, or share with your friends. Also, check out the Time for Awakening Marketplace in partnership with the B.B. Toomey. Always interesting things being added every day in the marketplace. Check it out. Make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight is 8:09 in the city of Philadelphia, and it's Freestyle Friday mode. Anything that's on your mind, give us a call. We'll talk about it. A lot of things going on, and we'll throw some things out for conversation. You can be part of it, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in Freestyle Friday mode on Time for an Awakening, and we'll be right back to start the program after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. Again, it's 8:14 in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in Freestyle Friday mode. And before we get started with our program, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. It's like you said, it's been an interesting week. But one of the major things that I think I've been thinking about is, you know, is it tomorrow? Tomorrow's Garvey's birthday, Marcus Garvey.
17th, yes.
The founder of the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African community. And, you know, I'm always one, you know, thinking of what do we need, you know, what does history say that we need now? And, you know, I've been, you know, I guess I'm a little obsessed with the point of, you know, thinking about 1920 and the UI had where you know, brought thousands of people from African people from all over, from the diaspora, brought us together in order to eke out not just an agenda, but a vision for our future. And it just seems that where we are now, you know, and think as we move towards 2020, you know, and what Marcus Garvey wanted to do in relationship to creating on a continent, a continental system of, you know, integrated continental system, and for Africans in the diaspora to get their own sovereignty or management structure for their own survival. So I guess that's, you know, one of the things, and then the incidents that's been going on. Philly that had his firecracker stuff, but I'll leave that to you, Ellie, because it's another, the two things is on my mind about Philly and the thing about the Israeli not allowing the congresswomen, and just it touched something in me, you know, this week.
Yeah, well, so that'll be part of the conversation. You know, anybody that joins us, they can bring up what they want. But that's two of the things that I wanted to bring up. You know, you mentioned Marcus Garvey, and it's important for us to remember our icons, because in this system that we live under, none of our icons are going to be remembered unless their narrative is changed by the system that we live under. They'll remember certain black icons, but they want to change the narrative to how they want us to remember certain black icons, whether it's King or a few others that they don't mind us recognizing. They change the narrative so you remember them in the fashion that they want you to. But we have to remember our icons in the fashion that they were, what they spoke, what they believed, and in totality, even if it was some things that we didn't agree what they were doing, we can have critical discussions on how we want to remember our icons, not how they want us to remember. And plus, one thing I always keep in mind, Richard, the way our people rallied around that movement and the understanding that there was no social media, there was no television, phones was a relatively new invention, and definitely everybody didn't have one. So the rallying of our people was basically it was almost amazing how it was done. Because you didn't have this mass media, and especially blacks wasn't using it. The mass media at that time, it wasn't necessarily mass, it was a media, but the use of it, it was really amazing how he was able to galvanize that many people in that short a period of time, Richard. From 1915, when he basically first burst on the scene, until 1920, what he did was relatively amazing.
Exactly. And so many black people participated in it. You know what I mean? Like, even those who didn't agreed wholeheartedly. And well, I guess what we're saying, and one thing about the 1920, you know, Elliot, you always make sure that we understand, because I think it is connected. I think history is dynamic but interconnected, right? So what came after the Civil War? You always use those leaders that came together, and he was talking to the general and what they wanted. Well, that was 1860, right?
Mm-hmm.
1864, 5, you know? So we're talking about 50 years after, 60 years after. So what the aspirations of black people saying, wanting to organize and build on themselves, it was a matter of having the leadership, leadership. And I like to think that it's not embodied just in a person, but being able to articulate the vision that so many people it resonated with so many people at that time. You know, because he came from Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it just seems that, you know, as you say, it, you know, just from 1915 to 1920, and he came to see Booker T. Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't overlook that in that convention of 1920, Africans came. I mean, they came. So it wasn't just the Africans in the Americas. It was the Africans in the islands and on the continent. They all, it resonated that we needed to create a global African sovereign being. And yes, I agree with you. That was, you know, phenomenal. I can't imagine what it was to be living at that moment.
Hey, listen, Richard, you mentioned how things resonated with our people globally, that we needed to do something different. It also, let's look at both sides of that coin. Mm-hmm. It resonated with Europeans that thought pattern was dangerous.
Right, exactly.
And they did everything they could from that point till now to make sure that they tried to control the narrative of whoever we quote unquote might have gravitated to or tried to follow. They wanted to get in there and try to control the narrative. And if they couldn't, they wanted to eliminate those people. So this man, even though we've seen what we tried to do, it was always a counter move by these people. They have never been a friend to black people. Our people need to understand that. Our people always want to look at, oh, he was a good one. That guy was good. Listen, I'm talking about the generality of what we're dealing with. I'm not talking about the few exceptions that you might have to go through history and pick out, like you're trying to pick out, lint from your coat. I'm not talking about doing that. We got to look at the general situation, because the general situation hasn't changed for our people. So that shows you that the general situation that have controlled this narrative have been the dominant factor.
Definitely. And you know, I was trying to find, because 1915, as you said, and when you talk about the dominant, and we have to say, and I know some people have problems with white supremacy, but the system that Europeans created, right, to give them the hegemony over all other people, especially African people, right, that, you know, during World War One, what was that? The president was, what's that guy came out of Princeton? Woodrow Wilson, mm-hmm. who also had the screening of The Birth of a Nation. They had to put together, because, you know, United States didn't want to go in the war. And this goes to your point about the narrative. United States didn't, the people didn't want to go to war in World War One. Wilson and his boys put together a propaganda machine to convince them why they needed to support the European war effort. So they put people on the street, they put posters, they did everything to convince, because they even made it so mandatory. So when you say by 1915, African people, in spite of a well-oiled propaganda, intentionally developed propaganda machine to convince Europeans and anybody here in America to participate in the war, African people obviously had their own narrative of what they seen as their reality. Because there would have been no other way they could have been able to come together under their own narrative if they fell victim to the propaganda machine totally that Wilson and them put together.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they convinced them, because you did get soldiers in World War One. But those men who came back, who fought in World War One, and women, they were the men who came back to Harlem, particularly where Garvey went to and became a part of that UNIA, that Universal Negro Improvement Association, because of the condition. They're saying we went and we helped liberate France, and hey, we got to come back this cracker and Jim Crow laws. We ain't having it.
Yeah,
and here's somebody emphasizing that we need to think, because they fought along with, because the whites didn't want them to fight with them, right? So they had to fight with the French. So they fought along with the African soldiers who were fighting in the French army, who were beginning their consciousness about colonialism, French controlling their nation, mm-hmm. their people. You know what I mean? So it becomes important to understand why, like you said, it's important to get our historical narrative and place our historical leaders in that narrative, because there's lessons. Because as you say, them white boys, obviously, I mean, Hoover cut his teeth. The war machine said that the English war machine contacted the American war machine to put somebody on Garvey and that movement. And they selected a young boy, little Tootsie, so they, you know. But he cut his teeth. And what he said, what did Hoover say? That he could not have any, what's that? Black, to the, in their mind, Black Messiah rising.
Mm-hmm.
That would become a national security threat for Black people to organize in their own interests around their own self narrative. Showed from Reconstruction through Reconstruction what could be done.
Yeah, well, listen, the struggle continues. We see what we're up against, and it doesn't change. The times change, but the situation doesn't seem to change.
Yeah.
We're still in the same struggle and same fight. 828 in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in Freestyle Friday mode. Anything that's on your mind, you can join the conversation. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. Again, it's 215-490-9832. Richard, we had that incident that occurred up here in Philadelphia on Wednesday. 35-year-old Black man with a standoff with police. According to published reports, he injured 6 police officers. He had an AR-15. But he managed to wound 6 officers, which is amazing in itself, Richard, because all these other people that have had that type of weapon, soon as they pull the trigger, it's instant death for a lot. Listen, that guy in that club, I think he killed 9 people in 30 seconds. But when this guy fired the AR-15, he wounded 6 officers. So, and then we see the standoff, and then it was ended like maybe 8 hours later. It was an interesting, and also, they was mentioning, Richard, I don't know whether you heard some of the grassroots talk, that the people in the area up there was jeering and pelting the police.
Yeah, I seen a clip. You know, where some commotion. I didn't get to hear the language, but, you know.
Now, they were supposed to have some type of demonstration up there today, too. I think they asked that police commissioner about it, and he tried to blow it off. I think the community was having some type of demonstration or something in reference to. Now, somebody put out the narrative. They were demonstrating in reference to that the guy that they pulled out of there. I don't think that's necessarily the case. knowing people in that area, I'm going to throw out what I think it might have been. I'll do it in a minute. Richard, you shared with me that article that Keith Ellison, who's a talk show host up there on the black terrestrial station here in Philadelphia, wrote in a published report in the Philadelphia Citizen. I think it's a little small publication up here, and wrote in reference to that area and in reference to the incident, which was interesting because a lot of folks don't really know. They see Philadelphia. They don't know some of these communities up here in Philadelphia that's totally black and the dynamic of what's going on. Even though we live in black areas all around this country, some areas is worse than others. And I'm talking about as far as the degradation and oppression that's put on our people that's in those areas. Also, that hospital closed up there on Broad Street and Vine, Richard, which causes more hardship for people in those areas. Because I would wager you, Richard, that a majority of the people, or put it this way, a large percentage of the people that worked at Hahnemann in patient transportation, in dietary, in other areas of that hospital, lived in Nicetown or lived in North Philly. What'd you think?
I agree. And it's been, it said that the amount of people that were working, I hadn't seen the numbers that were in specific location, but a lot of black Philadelphians who lived in the city worked at that hospital.
They just closed and is going to make a condo, luxury condos out of luxury living spaces out of that hospital. I want to share that.
And that area where the shooting took place is up for the continuation expansion of that kind of development.
You know what, Richard, and you helped me with this, because did Black and Noble close?
No, they didn't. They relocated, and he said downsized. So they're
not at that location anymore.
No, they're not at that location.
Now, that was an iconic location, mm-hmm. not only for that bookstore. That was the largest black bookstore that still existed in this city, right. I'd say without question. And you had black businesses that had been up there for a long time. You had a few black nightclubs at Broad and Erie. That was a black business area.
Right.
You see the results of it now. Especially with the closing of, or the downsizing. Or put it this way, Black and Noble is no longer at that location at right. Broad and Erie. But I'm going to share some of this article. And it might, because you shared it with me, Richard, so it might kind of bring back in mind some of the things that you might want to touch on. I'm going to kind of scan through this article and read some of the what he considered the key points here in reference to Nicetown. This article was written by, again, Charles Ellison. He's a host on the terrestrial black station here in Philadelphia. It's entitled Reality Check. Of course, it was Nicetown. Nicetown may be one of the more oxymoronic destinations for a large city neighborhood brutally tucked into an armpit corner of North Philadelphia. There are constant jokes surrounding its name, even while most of its residents have struggled to carve out a defiant contradiction of normalcy. Wednesday's epic shootout is a sign of Nicetown Tioga's generation-long war with itself and many problems that have plagued it. Wednesday's shooting of 6 police officers in a span of one late afternoon, however, completely outgunned that and may finally prompt a marked pivot from cute talk of rapid response. It's sad that it took a nearly deadly rampage to get to that. City Council is noticeably missing at the time when homicides this year are on a path to beat the record number of homicides from last year. they are not on a recess. Optically, it shows a complete leadership collapse that during a violent and record-breaking heat and flood summer, city council is on vacation. We saw the mayor, district attorney, and police commissioner up front, but we certainly did not see city council president Darrell Clark yesterday. Hold on a second. I'm sorry. Now, Richard, before I continue that article, I just want to reiterate what he just said about, and I know you caught it, about city council being noticeably absent.
Yep, and I believe that's the city council president.
Say that again. I'm sorry. Repeat that, Richard. I'm sorry.
I'm not convinced.
Yeah, I think the mic is getting a little. You might have to say that again. I'm gonna just go ahead and continue because I didn't catch what you said. It shows a complete leadership collapse.
Yeah, I was just saying that's our clock. Mm-hmm.
It shows a complete leadership collapse. Now, this is Keith Ellison's words. So when you hear us talking about a leadership collapse among black leadership locally and nationally, it's not us just blowing smoke or hating, as some of the young people might say. Some people that are in the know, and Keith Ellison is what they consider a political analyst here as far as black politics. He said it's a leadership collapse. So, you know, that's something to bear in mind when we're dealing with local politics, whether it's Philadelphia, Baltimore, Chicago, or other urban areas that's populated by people, Atlanta, all of them. Let me continue, Richard. It says, however, whatever the new response, it can't be limited to just a visible outrage over a barricade criminal having better firepower than the police. The officers need help. They need help with gun control. They don't deserve to be shot at. Now, this is Mayor Kenney's words, and he's quoting, "Our officers need help. They need help with gun control. They don't deserve to be shot at with unlimited supply of weapons and unlimited supply of bullets," said the perturbed Mayor Kenney outside Temple Hospital after checking in on a wounded officer. "This government, both on the federal and state level, don't want to do anything about getting these guns off the streets and getting them out of the hands of criminals." He's absolutely right. Now, this is back to Keith Ellison. He's absolutely right. And no better time to say that is while on national cameras are watching. But it's also the perfect time for equal pounds of outrage and protest over how badly conditioned Nicetown, Tioga is and has always been. The fear is here that yesterday's shooting turns into an opportunity to make Philly's violence problem all about police needing help, and not enough about the needs of what is arguably Philadelphia's most distressed neighborhood. Ironically, it was just highlighted as exactly that in the city's health department's first ever The Health of Philadelphia's 46 Neighborhoods reports. There is where, unintentionally, this week's grisly episode makes all kinds of unfortunate sense. Generally, the quality of life indicators for Nicetown, one of Philadelphia's most majority black communities, are among the most troubling citywide, especially when compared to Philly's 45 other neighborhoods. In fact, it ranks 45th overall on health outcomes, just one slot shy of battered Kensington, Upper Kensington, and 41 on the health factors such as socioeconomic variables, physical environment, behavior, and clinical care. Its life expectancy is about the lowest in the city. just 63.9 years of age for black men, 74.5 years for women, compared to the city's average of 72.3 for men and 79.3 for women, respectively. In Center City East, which is predominantly white, meanwhile, the life expectancy is 82 years old for men and 84.2 years for women. Clearly something is happening in Nicetown. And no one should be surprised, because something has always happened there. You can see it's just by driving or walking through it. For the past 11 years, Nicetown, Tioga have been among Philadelphia's top 10 deadliest neighborhoods, according to Philadelphia Inquirer's homicide rate analysis. Nicetown's homicides, in fact, have been on the uptick in recent years, and even besides homicides, it holds the grim distinction of being the most violent place in the city, according to the health department's data. Nearly 245 violent incidents per 100,000 people versus the city average of 96 per 100,000. The entire Nicetown population is under this 37,000 residents. I'm sorry, what'd you say, Richard?
No, you know, it's that part of his writing that I thought was so helpful, in the sense of giving us the numbers.
The numbers, exactly.
We hear all the time, and definitely we propagate here at Time for Awakening, the poverty level that exists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the question of whether these black leadership or black political leadership or black political entrepreneurs or black political fiefdoms that exist, whether they're on vacation or not, it's obviously that they haven't been able to create, not necessarily whoever is mayor, because a lot of those men and women have been in those positions for a while.
For a while.
But
exactly.
They haven't been able to create any policy initiative to address the condition of that community. So and to me,
and they don't seem to be interested too, Richard, but go ahead. I don't want to break your thought.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, I don't want to break your thought.
When we generalize it, we don't see, because what those numbers, and I don't think that he's given the general statistics, but when you do and another set of matrix, the quality of life, the misery index, meaning what people really feel, who have to live through this existence day after day and at one generation after another. Because Nicetown wasn't always like that.
No, it wasn't.
Right. And black people did live there.
Certainly.
So this is a transition as the general planning community, which is predominantly white, which is predominantly corporate, which is predominantly large, or as they said, which is one of the major driving hubs in Nicetown, besides that hospital, but Temple University, when you talk about meds and eds, right? And that university expanding with its own hospital, because Temple has its own hospital, its teaching hospital. So, you know, when we start with the numbers, we can be able to really, for those of us who live in other areas, can look at their area and see, I would assume those numbers aren't different. And people we've interviewed here on Time for Awakening give testimony that those numbers aren't different. So and the political representation is the same as far as there being black political leadership without any kind of policy.
Exactly.
That is where, because the forest, the called the parasitic type of relationship that the media came out. I just so happened left work early that day, And therefore, I catch the train and I would come up at that area or go down in that area. So by leaving early, I missed it. But the media was there the next day. I mean, making a farce because they didn't address none of this.
No, they didn't intend to.
Share.
Exactly. Right. They didn't intend to. I mean, you heard.
What they dressed was what the mayor dressed.
Exactly. About gun violence and things of that nature.
And the police being needed to be protected.
But the raw number, listen, that one figure that he quoted here, which was excellent, I might try to get Ellison on here to talk about that article. That the number that he, Richard, let me say this again because it can't bear repeating. And plus I want to read this other part, a little small paragraph before I leave off this article. It says, the life expectancy is the lowest in the city. 63 years for black men and 74.5 years for women, compared to the city's average of 72.3 years for men and 79.3 years for women. But in Central City East, which is predominantly white, the life expectancy is 82 for men and 84.2 for women. So, Richard, in this era that's predominantly black, and Philadelphia is predominantly black for people that don't know all over the country that's not aware of the dynamic here. Philadelphia is predominantly black, but Nicetown is overwhelmingly black. The life expectancy for that neighborhood for black men is 63 years. For this same neighborhood, not same neighborhood, excuse me, for another neighborhood in Philadelphia that's overwhelmingly predominantly white, is 82 years for white men. Look at it's a 20-year difference, Richard. 20 years different.
And that directly speaks to the quality of life.
Exactly. And the conditions.
Poverty places on an individual and the health care that is required in order to have that type of other quality of life to give you the extension of life.
Now, let me read this last paragraph before I leave off this article, because he dealt with a couple things here. It says, Philadelphia's food insecurity rate is 22%, higher than the national average of 19%. There we see an overlay. When we look at a map of gun violence throughout Philadelphia via the Inquirer, which is the publication here, it's fascinating. The maps of poverty, gun violence, and food insecurity are nearly identical. Massive stretches of North Philadelphia and West Philadelphia have areas of majority black population and shows deep pockets of 20% to over 30% food insecurity. In Nicetown, Tioga, rates appear above 30% threshold, and Richard, the national average is 19%. But in those areas, it's up above 30%, Richard.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's showing you what's going on. And this is another thing that I didn't like. Because the next day, Richard, I don't know whether you caught it on the television, they was doing commercials about the police and how people ought to be happy with the police. See, this was a perfect PR move for the Philadelphia Police Department, which is headed by a black man, and city council, which is predominantly black, because they had just got a black eye from those 330 white officers that was on that racist website calling black people all kind of names, racist epithets and everything else. So this was a perfect PR opportunity for them, and they capitalized on it. What you doing making a television commercial talking about the attributes of Philadelphia Police Department a day after this incident? They had two commercials on Philadelphia television dealing for the police. Now, here's this incident that I want to mention in regards to this. Because a lot of people got into terrestrial radio, Black Talk Radio, the next day and said that they believed a lot of it was staged. And the black host blew several callers off the air when they said that. I kind of understood what they were trying to say. They weren't saying that this guy shooting at the police was staged, like it was actors involved. But they were talking about how it was handled by the police department. They used that opportunity to have a long standoff when it could have been ended before that. But, Richard, let's look at this. And I want the Time for Awakening audience to understand this. You got an idea of that area of Philadelphia where that incident took place. This gentleman, Ellison, wrote an excellent article by the numbers talking about that neighborhood. But I want everybody to understand this. That incident that happened up there would have never taken place in a white neighborhood, not only in Philadelphia, anywhere in the country. It would have never taken place. And you might be asking, well, what do you mean by that, brother? Well, I'm going to tell you this. That warrant, now, number one, when the police issue a warrant, Richard, it's some investigation that has went on. Surveillance, things of that nature. They know you might be doing something. They've seen your movements. They know what you're doing. You follow me, Richard?
Definitely.
So it gets to the point where they issue a warrant. Let's go in Rich's house. I think he's doing something in there. They know what you're doing, or they got an idea what you're doing. They issued a warrant for that area right off of Broad and Erie, where they went into that guy's house and the guy met them with gunfire. They issued that warrant, Richard, at 4:30 in the afternoon across from a daycare center. It was a large daycare center directly across the street. That would have never happened in a white community. Why would you issue? And see, these black elected officials here is not going to ask the critical question because they're so focused in on this guy that had been a repeat criminal. But why would you issue a warrant in a busy black urban area right off of a commercial district where there's a daycare center right across the street? You don't know if you're going in there for a drug warrant. You might be met with gunfire. Anything could happen. You put those children in jeopardy. They interviewed several parents that said when they got texts from their children in the daycare center, they immediately left off their job and ran straight to that area. And a lot of them couldn't get in because it was cordoned off. So you got parents at their wits' end hearing gunfire and know they can't get to their children. You got a Philadelphia Police Department with a clown that's ahead of it, the black guy that looked like me and you, Richard, that issued a warrant, or supposed to have been, maybe he didn't make the decision, like when they dropped that bomb on Move and Wilson Good wasn't involved but took responsibility for it. Maybe he didn't make the decision. If he did make the decision, he needs to hold himself accountable to the black community. Why would you issue a warrant in a busy neighborhood at 4:30 when people getting off from work, walking home, going to pick up their children from the daycare center right across from where they issued a warrant? Why would you do it?
And you know, the sinister thing, and I'm speculating, right? But you know, in that area, there has been, and in Pennsylvania and in Philadelphia specifically, there's been discussion, especially among community, about dealing with the question around trauma amongst children and education. Because they're raising the point that children being trauma victims because of the level of gun violence that is occurring within the community. Now, hear what they're saying, and it upset me as I heard it, but the level of gun violence are creating trauma victims. Now, we're talking about like being in occupied areas, right? They're saying our children are traumatized, and because they're traumatized, they cannot learn when they go to school. So what schools and the political and discussion has been going on within the North Philadelphia community is around Temple or the city council wanting to set up a daycare. And I don't have the details, but I've been informed about it and been following, but to set up some kind of system to where on one level they're studying the children trauma while they're assisting, you know, because it's a health problem. So they're going to infuse money through the health system to address the trauma so that they can address the educational outcome. And so the Temple University wants to be a part of this development by producing this institution, which the community, they had aired their meeting, and where some members have felt that they're doing research on their children and didn't want this particular type of institution to be developed because of that. But so when you're talking about being staged, because I did see, and I was on, I don't watch television, so I don't get to see that kind of feed. So I only get what comes through the internet. I did see a photographic clip in a head byline of saying police helps escort 80 children, helps escort 80 children out of this here gun-ridden area.
Yeah, but they escorted them out of there at 8 o'clock. They went in there and there was gunfire. They executed that warrant at 4:30, and it was almost gunfire immediately. So it wasn't until 8 o'clock when they was able to take the children out of there. Why would you even issue a warrant? They would have never done that in a white community. Mm-hmm. And these black elected officials standing up there with that idiot mayor, they didn't have nothing to say. All they was talking about was this guy that had been to jail, that had an extensive record that they kept letting out of jail and unleashing them on the community. And keep in mind, Richard, that these some of our people that get caught up in this prison industrial plantation, this modern day slavery, some of our people that get caught up in that, they got to realize that, see, before when guys went to this incarceration, they could get their GED, mm-hmm. Get some type of training where they could come out and get viable, they could change their life. It's not that way anymore. You can't get no GED in there. They don't offer training. All they do is put you to work for one of these and making a penny a day. They put you to slave labor, just like they did with our ancestors back in the day. And then when you come out, you don't have any viable skill than when you went in. The only thing you know how to do is almost what you went in there for. So when you come back into these communities, generally, unless you got a strong mind, you're right back into the same thing that you were doing. And they know this. This stuff is structurally, it's systematically engineered. They know this. These people are unleashed back. And see, that's the thing now, Richard, that you're seeing differently. They know that this meth and all this stuff that the white folks are taking now, they know it's going to devastate their people. So it's money involved now. They're issuing all this money. You see commercials on the television where if your child is hooked on this meth and all this other stuff, that they can get help. And that help is not only to get off drugs, Richard. A lot of that help is so they can get training, they can get back on their feet and become viable members of what they consider society. That's what that money is. They don't want you to get so-called back on your feet because you're not on your feet when you go in. They don't want you to become viable members of society. They want you to be repeat offenders in this modern day slavery. So they make sure that, and like I said, unless you got a strong mind to avoid these people and these slave catchers, they make sure that you're going to be a repeat offender. They asking all these dumbass questions. Oh, how? Because I think the guy had 12 arrests for different offenses. How did he get back? You heard, I don't know whether you heard some of these press conferences.
No, I didn't. Richard,
back on the street? Don't ask them those stupid questions. And black elected officials asking the same old dumbass questions. Don't ask those questions. How did you get back on the street? How did they get back on the street?
Don't ask those questions. And you would think, you know, if Ellis, who wrote the article, and he put those numbers, that the elected officials who really are thinking about the broader condition of the community that they represent, that they would be pulling a narrative together to speak to why we need to be funneled in, as you say, in those different areas to support health, so for the quality of life, the food desert, the type of food, where at the national level, they're trying to cut all of that. You would think that they would utilize, if they want to utilize, to be able to try to foster the development, the healthy development of their community. Not just because what that does is only a dichotomy there, right? You're either supporting the police and degrading the prisoner. Well, the prisoner is black. You've been degrading black people from black males from the beginning. And I don't know the condition of this guy to go in and out 12 times, but we know that black, young black males from 18 to 35 have not been able to get employment. And the only employment they've been able to get that's been consistent and gets them through the prison industrial complex is what they call the underground or criminal community. Employment that's there.
You know, one of they read off his list, I guess a partial list, of some of his offenses that he'd been convicted for. A bunch of them has been drugs. One of the offenses, Richard, that he was convicted for was taunting a police animal. Now, I don't know what the hell, whether it was a horse or a dog. They usually have horses or a dog. You convicted for taunting a police animal. I'm gonna leave it like that, Richard. Come on.
I think we need to continue to unpack this because poverty has always, we have within the black community this characterization of poverty pimps, right? Poverty has always been a means of supporting a certain group of income through the class level. Well, it seems to me that this, what they're, and what you described as the recidivism rate and whatever, is producing employment for a group of students that are coming out of the educational system with severe debt and no jobs.
Exactly.
So if you produce people who are broken because you don't produce policy to assist before the educational system, now you're saying the children is at a traumatic level, so you can be able to nurture them at an early age, and what kind of services do they need in order to deal with their trauma, right? So that's an industry. Then you have the recidivism of, because isn't it here in Philadelphia where the campaign of trying to, because, you know, the whole thing of the district attorney was about being able to release prisoners who were unduly incarcerated, young people, and try to get them, that's the reason why he was supposed to be a progressive DA. Well, won't they need services because, you know, you already got a strike against you from being a quote unquote called a felon. So you're not supposed to be able to pick up easily in order to be able to get a, if their jobs exist, a job at all. Huh. Right? Then it's the housing. Because when you come out, you don't have no job. You still need a place to stay. So these agencies that are supposed to help you expunge your record, you know, find you a place to stay, don't they need service providers in order to assist these individuals? Which, as you said, they pulled those kind of services out of the prison system, being able to get your GED, be able to look for employment. They pulled those services out. So you got this cadre of young people being in a city like Philadelphia, where is producing, what is, I don't know how many universities, because that's what they celebrate, right? All these colleges here. And a lot of them ain't taking engineering courses or computer science courses. No. They're taking criminal justice courses, humanity courses, arts and humanities. And they got $60,000 worth of debt. What are they going to do? Well, if they can, you know, be over, provide counseling for these young children, you know, poor children. This winter, last winter, they were in school buildings that the water didn't have no heat, didn't have no toilet, and the water had lead in it. Correct me if I'm wrong. Because I get a little full of myself, but, you know, help me, Elliot. Am I missing it?
No, I mean, that was the case. In fact, in a lot of these communities, in the winter, the schools is closed, cold, and you can't drink water, let alone it's got lead in it. Some of the fountains is undrinkable. You get, you almost got to put your mouth totally on the receptacle to have a trickle of water coming out. So you can't even, unless they bring bottled water, which I don't even know whether they're allowed to bring anything in there. You know, you might be able to bring something in your lunch bag if they even have lunch. But in fact, Baltimore was the same way with the children sitting in these buildings with the coat on and all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How you going to learn like that? You don't see no white schools with the children sitting in there with their clothes on, with their coats on.
So we...
That's a failure of these... I don't care whether they don't like it. I'm heating on them. That's a failure of these black elected officials. When they take these jobs, because they do have access to monies, they might not have the total access to all of these money, but they have access to monies. So they need you to do all they can, rally with one another, come up with a Marshall Plan for their communities. You don't need to rally with white folk because they're not going to do nothing in relation to your communities. You need to rally with one another to establish Marshall Plans for these black communities when you become a black elected official in these areas. That's what you should be doing. What they're doing is something different.
And for me, that goes back to what we were discussing when we were talking about the UNIA and what Garvey was doing. Because they ain't had no money coming from the government. They had inspiration and people believing that they can do. That's what he spoke to. That's what they spoke to. As you said, they had the organ, the information organ. They created that, the Negro World, the writers that inspired people to want to participate, even though, because the condition was the same. Elliot, we're talking about 1920, 1525. We're talking about sharecroppers. We're talking about in New York. You know, we're talking about the beginning of the Depression coming into being. People ain't had much, but they had a will.
They had a will to do it, yeah.
They had someone to inspire that will to do better than what their condition actually just showed itself to be.
You know, somebody wrote on the Time for Awakening page, one of the articles, a comment about blacks need to stop trying to look for government handouts and try to do what we can for ourselves. And when I'm talking about these elected officials using monies, I'm not talking about a handout, Richard. In fact, you know what I'm talking about. And some of the Time for Awakening listeners might know. Some of the people on social media that see articles, they might not know. I'm not talking about no handout because our people pay taxes in this country just like Europeans. So the monies that come into these cities, whether they're from government, state monies, and especially local monies that's come from the tax base, the local tax base, they come into these cities that's used in other areas. That's what I'm talking about. I ain't talking about no handout money. I'm talking about money, tax money. Money that's supposed to be utilized in your own communities, like other people utilize these monies in their own communities. These people are not utilizing the monies in our own communities. The money goes out of our communities. And if you don't believe it, look in your communities. We just read those figures about Nicetown, Tioga, where this incident happened Wednesday. Look at your own communities, the Time for Awakening audience, wherever you live at. Look at your communities. Look at your elected officials. Where's the tax monies that are utilized? Where's the, that's supposed to be utilized to develop businesses in your own community? Look at the businesses in your community. How many black businesses are there? Count them on one hand if you got some. And look how many businesses are occupied by other people in your own community. Whether it's Latinos, whether it's Asians, whether it's so-called Jewish folks or whatever. Look at whether it's whites, Anglos. Look at the businesses in your communities. And then go to those same communities and look and see if you see any of your businesses in their communities. Then you'll see what I'm talking about a failure of black leadership. It ain't about looking for no damn handout. It's about getting a fair share of at least the tax money that you're putting into this place.
Isn't that what you call proportional representation?
Well, yeah. come on. Let's take a brief break, Richard. And when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. I want to throw into the mix here what happened with these two congresswomen and this thing about Israel. Because I think it kind of points again. It points again. The finger pointed again, Richard, at these people that consider themselves black representatives, the black caucus. Let's deal with it. And you can deal with it, too, by joining the conversation at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard the special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I must be measured by my soul. The mind is the standard of the man. With this new sense of dignity and this new sense of self-respect, a new Negro came into being with a new determination to suffer, to struggle, to sacrifice, and even to die if necessary in order to be free.
Hang on to the world as it spins around.
All our people. Righteous by nature, wicked by circumstance, so we are going to try to save our people. Take control of our communities. Anybody that want justice, come out of those parties that won't give you justice, and let's have a justice party and set up our own candidates, run them in the cities. Take down the weak, blood suckers of the poor, and cast them out, and set up people that will fight for justice for us.
Because there's a whole lot of illusions about Africa's relationship with other people in the world. There's a whole lot of illusion about our relationship to the religions in the world. And these belief systems that had its origin in Africa, all of them, and there is no exception, turned on African people. I said there is no exception. And there's one thing you have to get through your mind and keep it. Nothing that ever came from the European mind was meant to do anything but facilitate European domination of the world. And I said, there's no exception. Everything that was brought into this continent, everything, every idea, every so-called religion, was meant to dominate and to control. The Arabs had no illusions about it. The Europeans had no illusions about it. You were the ones with the illusions. And yet every element that went into the making of every major religion in the world started in Africa. Why is it that you are so naive? You let people redress something that you invented, sell it back to you, and enslave you through it.
If we are to defeat the European, if we are to master this earth and take back this earth from the European, then we must outthink the European. We must then be creative. That puts the learning emphasis on the how-ness, the how to think as such, and to the use of knowledge as a tool of mastery. So it's a very different kind of thing. As a result, you see, the control and the paternalism of Europeans over black people. You see, the other thing that we must recognize, even if the European becomes good and nice and accepts us and so forth, the fact that he would still be in control creates a what we might call a benevolent paternalism, which still to a great degree helps to maintain this passive mode of thinking and this passive mode of knowledge.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:20. I'm sorry, 8:20. 9:20. Oh boy, I'm losing track. 9:20 in the city of Philadelphia. We're in Freestyle Friday mode here on Time for an Awakening. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Richard.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit, and we got a couple calls on hold. I want to talk a little bit about the two women that's not allowed to come to Israel. One of them is a Palestinian by nationality, and wanted to take the opportunity to see her grandmother that lives in an occupied area when she went there. But let me read just a couple paragraphs, some of this article, not a couple paragraphs, some of this article, one from the Huffington Post and the other from the Daily Mail in reference to the situation that was going on. This is from the Huffington Post. Israel bars Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib from entering country over BDS support. Now, you remember, Richard, about 2 weeks ago, maybe three, when we discussed that legislation that flew through with bipartisan support, flew through Congress in reference to that BDS, and it would be repercussions for people that spoke out against Israel, but it would have to be determined by states the extent of that repercussion. You remember that, Richard?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, now let's go into this article. Israel bars Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib from entering the country over BDS support. Representative Ilhan Omar from Minnesota and Rashida Tlaib from Michigan, two of Israel's sharpest critics in Congress, have been barred from entering the country ahead of their proposed visit to the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem, Israeli officials said Thursday. The decision had been made. The decision is not to follow them to enter. This decision is not to allow them to enter. Israeli Deputy Foreign Minister Tipsy Atuptovly, I know I'm butchering these names, told Israel's Rasset Radio. Israel decided to ban the freshman lawmakers in response to their support for the pro-Palestinian boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. BDS seeks to put economic pressure on Israel to recognize the movement's demands, which include equal rights for Arab Palestinian citizens of Israel and the country's withdrawal from occupied territories. Under Israeli law, supporters of the movement can be denied entry to the country. The decision to bar congresswomen comes after Israel's ambassador to the United States, Ron Dermer, said last month that Omar and Tlaib would be allowed to visit. Out of respect for the U.S. Congress and the great alliance between Israel and America, we would not deny entry to any member of Congress into Israel, he said. That's what he said a month ago.
Right.
President Donald Trump tweeted Thursday, it would show great weakness if Israel allowed Omar and Tlaib to visit, calling the congresswomen a disgrace. Omar and Tlaib condemned Netanyahu's decision in separate statements, with the Minnesota lawmaker calling it Israel's version of Trump's Muslim ban. Denying entry into Israel not only limits our ability to learn from Israelis, but to enter the Palestinian territory, she said in a statement. Sadly, it is not a surprise given the public positions of the Prime Minister Netanyahu, who have consistently resisted peace efforts, restricted the freedom of movement of Palestinians, and limited public knowledge of the brutal realities of the occupation, and allied himself with Islamophobia like Donald Trump. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu defended this decision to block the visit in a Facebook post, saying no other country respects America and the American Congress more than the State of Israel. A week ago, Israel warmly welcomed 70 Democratic and Republican members of Congress who expressed broad bipartisan support for Israel, which also demonstrated a month ago in responding bipartisan support for the BDS in Congress, he wrote. However, the itinerary of the two congresswomen revealed the sole purpose of their visit is to harm Israel and to increase incitement against it. So we see here that that they barred these two women from coming into the country. They kind of backtracked on that slightly, Richard. I want to read that article because that's kind of like the follow-up article that was in the Daily Mail. A month ago, that they said that they would allow them to come in, and then they turned around based on a tweet by Trump, but I don't think it was on necessarily Trump. I think all of them are involved in it. They use some of his idiotic statements about people being a disgrace, which is a joke in itself, but not allowing them to come in the country. More importantly, Richard, two things. Israel is supposed to be an ally to the United States, which they are. But I thought when foreign governments don't allow your representatives in or bar them from a country, that's almost tantamount to an act of war. I'm no politician. I'm not even a student of politics. Ain't that what Malcolm said? But isn't that, for example, when these countries kick your representatives out or close your embassy and tell them to leave, that's almost like you're making steps towards some type of conflict.
Right.
I mean, am I right or wrong? So
that's the way I understand it.
You got two people, and if I'm not mistaken, both of them are members of the Black Caucus.
Right.
You got two people that's been barred. Now, I wonder how many Black Caucus members, because I already know how many voted for that BDS. You see that they were credited in Netanyahu in his statement. They voted with bipartisan support to pass this BDS. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of throwing the ball back on the United States. We're right. just going along with what you said. That's basically what he's saying. Right. We already talked about how many of them voted for it. But how many of them went over, was the 70 that went over there not too long ago? It was 70 of them, according to this article, that just went.
Right, right. Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah. Now, I'm not even focusing in on white folks. They do what they do. But yeah, I wonder
primarily freshmen.
I wonder how many of these Black representatives was over there. Well, they don't need to hide. Don't hide you. Tell the people what you're doing. Tell be up front. Say who you are. Don't hide it. And why are they not responding to this? They're silent. They're not responding to this. Now, let me read this other part to it. It's kind of a part two to that, Richard. Because they had drafted a letter for the two women to sign, or at least the one woman that had the mother in the West Bank to sign, Rashida Tlaib. And she refused to sign it. Similar to when Cynthia McKinney was on here and said that she was in Congress and they wanted her to sign this letter in support of Israel, and she refused to. So they ran people against her and got her out of office. And I asked her to these other Congress people, all the people that was in office at the time, and she was on terrestrial radio when she said this. I said, did all of them sign this letter? And she said yes, beside her, that all of the rest of them had signed this letter to give allegiance to a foreign government over the interests of your own people. Because it's clear that Black folks, according to these polls that have been taken, look at Israel as a foreign government and have interests opposite to the Black community. So you as a Black representative sign your allegiance to a foreign government over the allegiance of your own people. Now let me read the portion of this thing from the Daily Mail. It says, Democratic Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib says she will not visit her grandmother in the occupied West Bank after Israel granted her entry. I have decided that visiting my grandmother under these oppressive conditions stands against everything that I believe in. Israel's minister granted her visitation on humanitarian grounds. Now let me read this second portion, because they had drafted a letter for her to sign. Let me read some of this here, and then we'll move forward and take some calls in reference to it. A Democratic Congresswoman, Rashida Tlaib, said Friday she will not visit her grandmother in the occupied West Bank after Israel granted her entry into the country, arguing it would stand against everything I believe in. Silencing me and treating me like a criminal is not what I stand for. It would kill a piece of me. I have decided that visiting my grandmother under these oppressive conditions stands against everything I believe in. Fighting against racism, oppression, and injustice, she said. Her rejection of Israel's offer comes after the government agreed to allow the Muslim lawmaker entry if she vowed not to promote BDS sanctioned movement, a boycott against Israel. So they had drafted this letter saying if you mm-hmm. say that you don't support it, then you can come in. Mm-hmm. She writes, When I won my office, it gave the Palestinian people hope that someone would finally speak the truth about the inhumane conditions. I can't allow the state of Israel to take away that light by humiliating me and using my love for my city to bow down to their oppressive and racist policies. Silencing me and treating me like a criminal is not what she wants for me. It would kill a piece of me. I have decided that visiting my grandmother under these oppressive conditions stands against everything I believe in, fighting against racism, oppression, and injustice. Now, she stated that her grandmother was in her 90s.
Right.
And it would have been an opportunity to see her because, you know, when somebody's that old, you don't know when they might be, called home. But, some of these folks, man, Richard, some of these people that claim they represent black folks here in this country need to take a page out of this, man, because some of these people, man, they're worse than infidels. Mm-hmm. I just want to read what she said in the statement because they drafted this letter for her to sign and she refused. Let me read this because it can sink into all of these people from Dwight Evans to Cummings to all of them. Let me read this again. When I won, I gave Palestinian people hope that someone will finally speak the truth about the inhumane conditions. I can't allow the state of Israel to take away the light by humiliating me and using my love for my city to bow down to their oppressive and racist policies. Silencing me and treating me like a criminal is not what she wants for me. It would kill a piece of me. I have decided that visiting my grandmother under these oppressive conditions stands against everything I believe in, fighting against racism, oppression, and injustice. So she wasn't going to be bought, is what mm-hmm. she's stating. Some of these people that keep on going for the okey-doke and all this other stuff, and not the okey-doke, I'm sorry, are putting themselves out there for sale. You know, wait a minute. Before I go to these calls, I want to be fair, Richard. I'm going to be fair. Because some of these elected officials are doing something. Now, let me read to you what they're doing, according to published reports. Now, this report came 2 weeks ago, and it was reported in the Jewish Telegraph, the paper called the Jewish Telegraph, JTA.org. Let me read it because it shows our elected officials at work, Richard. And I want to be fair because if they're doing something, I want to highlight it. And this brother, and I'm going to use that term loosely, this brother happened to be in the news a couple of weeks ago when he was criticized about what he's not doing for his district, his people. And he was criticized by this president who really don't care about his people, but he kind of used that opportunity to throw a dig at him. Elijah Cummings, now this is the title of the article. Elijah Cummings started a program that brings African-American teens to Israel, according to the Jewish Telegraph Agency, the JTA. 8 years ago, Atiyah Cantrell knew little about the Jewish community, but beyond what she had seen on a visit to the local Jewish community center and to use the pool. It took a different, things look different now for the 24-year-old. She joined the prestigious 2-year program for African-American teens in Baltimore. The program, founded by Representative Elijah Cummings, seeks to strengthen ties between African-Americans and Jews in the Baltimore district. As a part of her fellowship in 2011 to 2013, Cuntrell met with Jewish teens, attended seminars on topics of anti-Semitism and the Holocaust, and spent a month living in a Jewish village in the Israeli north. Cuntrell said that having done the program, she believes is critical in the two communities having good ties. From what I saw growing up and from what I have studied now, when I was in college and learned about the incidents in the past, these communities are very close, says Cuntrell, who works as a communications coordinator, as she told the Jewish Telegraph Agency. Bringing them together is important. Bringing these two communities that are that have a very close struggle, they can support each other during rough times. She is one of more than 200 graduates of Elijah Cummings' Youth Leadership Program in Israel. The fellowship, which celebrates its 20th anniversary this year, was founded by the African-American lawmaker to bridge the gap between the Jewish and black community in Baltimore. Every year, about a dozen teens chosen to participate in this program. The recent weeks, Cummings have been under attack by Donald Trump. No, I'm not going to read all that. I just want to highlight that for 20 years, Richard, he's been handpicking some of our best potential leaders, because that's who they're choosing, potential leaders to basically be indoctrinated about Jewish Holocaust and anti-Semitism. I don't know what that has to do with any black youth in this country. I'm not even dealing with anybody else's struggles. Anti-Semitism and the Holocaust have nothing to do with me, beside our Holocaust here.
You know, Elliot,
when I'm raising my children, that's not paramount in my mind. It's paramount in their mind to teach their children. And that's up to them. That's totally up to them. I don't want my children going over to halfway across the world to spend a month with Jewish people learning about anti-Semitism and the Holocaust. For what? Like I said before, it reminds me of the Manchurian candidate. Why are you taking hand-picking over the past 20 years some of our potential best and brightest young people to go over there? For what? For what? What are you doing, Elijah Cummings? What are you doing? And you're not alone. You got other elected officials doing the same thing. Answer to the community, what is this for? He was probably one of the 70 that went over there. He'd been doing this program for 20 years. I wonder how much they're giving him for doing it. You think he's doing it free, Richard?
Oh, no.
Doing it out of goodness of his heart?
I mean, well, even those 70 that's over there now and those who have went every time, APEC, the Jewish lobby organization, pays for that.
Yeah, they might pay for that, but I think they're paying a little bit more, too. They're paying in other ways, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean.
It's coming out of, but the thing is, beyond the indoctrination and orientation to Jewish perspective on or how Israel looks at the world, or from the world to look for, you know, to be able to look through the world through Jewish eyes, is that they are learning negotiation skills. And could you imagine for 20 years that you have been developing people to come within black communities that you're saying is marginalized and is fractionalized and, you know, being and need skilled negotiators to be able to bring the different interest groups that are within the Black community that prevents it from being able to be a unified power nexus within the majority community that's going up against power interests of business, a corporate business, manufacturing business, technical business, university business. Could you imagine if a program like that was taking young Black men and women and conditioning and developing them to look at the world through black view and go out there and bring them together? And you've been sending them, seeding the community with individuals like that for 20 years.
I know
what kind of unified base we would have.
But you're sending some of our quote unquote best and brightest out of that city, and you got Black elected ones, because according to that article I read last week, they chose Congress people, representatives, and city council people. You remember that, Richard?
Oh, yeah.
To choose people to send. You got our people being sent to a foreign government and then come back here for what? For what purpose? What is this? Give an exit. These people need to get. Listen, our people. Listen, I quote that scripture. Our people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. We need to question these people. What the hell are you doing? What is this? What are you doing? Give us an explanation.
And I do want to hear, but it's just because, maybe another time, because the question you raised something that speaks from a political organizing and what we need to do. Because in the end, the largest constituency base in the Black community are those of us who do not participate within the electoral process. And it's because of the things that you're laying out now, the need for us to organize, become politically educated and participate in the process so that we can be able to take control and put the right type of political leadership in those positions who are about developing policy that develops programs like that for our community.
Wow. Let's go take a couple of these calls. We got two online. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes. Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, good brothers. I am a firm believer that wherever Black people make up the mass majority of the population, we should control the economics and body politics of that community.
I agree.
And if the Black politician ain't saying, look, economic control of the Black community, then they ain't serving the Black community. Because that is the most important thing, is the economic base. If that money is not circulating back into the Black community, then it's all for naught. And as you say, these people ain't concerned. These politicians, they are flunkies. We call them flunky junkies, hooked on being a flunky. So, they ain't gonna change. Yeah, people ain't gonna change. But, you talk about the water crisis, lead. You're having the same thing occurring right now in New Jersey. You're having a lead in the water. They got to be supplying them with bottled water. You see, so it's Flint, Michigan, it's in Philly, it's in Baltimore, it's in, but anyway, really what I want to say is Marcus Garvey, on Sunday, there's going to be a program broadcasting out of Jamaica on YouTube. You can catch it on YouTube, live stream, IRE FM with Muta Baruka, IRIE FM. With Muta Baruka. It's a whole day program celebrating Garvey, and you can catch it on YouTube, live stream. They've been doing it for 26 years. So you can get a little sanity. Because this is a nut house we live in. You know, this, you know, and I say Gavi is getting more relevant every day because we see the conditions. As somebody said, they said, when all else failed to organize, when all else failed to organize the people, conditions will. And the preview you laid out is showing the conditions. The conditions getting worse. See, they create the conditions in the community and then blame us for the conditions. You know, it's not ironic that all black communities have the same problem. You know what I'm saying? All black communities everywhere you go in America are, you know, it's the same problem. You know, it's poverty, crime, you know, churches are all around the place. The money being carted out the black community. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you know, but again, it's always a slip between the cup and the lip. And I think we're going to win this struggle because we ain't stupid people. We ain't been on this earth here being stupid, you know? You know, so if the game is he who lives the longest win, and even a rat will get off a sinking ship. We see what's happening in America. The place is sinking. So, you know, anyway, good brothers, I appreciate your program. And please keep on keeping on, good brothers. Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution.
All right, good brother.
Let's go to 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. How y'all doing?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. All praise be to Allah. You know, Brother Marcus, man, it's so good to follow Brother Marcus. You're always on point. Brother Marcus, you're always on point, my brother. Always on point. You know, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, I don't know where to begin. Y'all got my brains stimulating because y'all got a hell of a show tonight. Y'all got so many good topics and so many things to digest. But before, I'm going to say my comments for Keith Ellison a little later on. But, Ellen, when you were saying about how they took that situation on Wednesday and they could have been, like you said, it was so overplayed because, like you said, it was pretty much a big PR move what followed this individual, you know, shooting at the police. But if you go back, Brother Elliot, you and Brother Richard being students of history, the white man always has a way of doing things, especially when he want to either murder our people or set up a stage for a PR move. If you go back to 1985, May the 13th, when they felt the need to drop a bomb, and this was the most costliest eviction in history, that you could evict somebody by killing them, dropping a bomb, shooting them back into a burning house. Everybody, they got any brain, because I got friends of mine live out that way, Ellie, and I think you said, Ellie, you knew some people live out that way. Every morning, Elliot, this is not no opinion, this is fact. If the police really wanted to arrest Move and evict them, they could have did it any day because every morning the Move members and their families would come out and exercise. They would do this every day around 6 in the morning, whatever the case was. Everybody in the neighborhood knew it. They would come out. They didn't have no weapons on them. They would just come out, exercise, you know, do what they do for hours. So if they really wanted to evict them, they could have did it. You know, you understand what I'm saying, Elliot?
Yeah, they used to go right down to the Cops Creek, which is half a block away, and exercise in the park.
The police could have surrounded them, put a barricade around, and arrested every last one. That was what the intent was. So when people start that dumb stuff about, well, you know, they came to evict them and arrest them. No, their whole ultimate goal was to murder them. Because, again, like you said, Elliot, they used to go right down to Cops Creek and exercise. I mean, this was common knowledge and stuff, you know. These people, bro, they are some evil, wicked demons and stuff, man, you know? But see, Elliot, on Terrestrial Radio, Brother Shamari, again, everybody's not as deep at the wheel. He came on today and he said the same thing with you and Brother Richard discussing tonight about how when you look at this PR, big PR move for the police coming after all this negativity about the racist slurs and violent stuff that was promoted against black people and stuff that was, you know, and that was ultimately, you know, investigated and revealed by Plainview. Now, here's the thing, Brother Elliot. Shamari made a good point. He says this was like a dry run too, because And Ellie, again, you and Richard, y'all being students of history, and this is for the time for working listeners when it's around the country. This is how the white man do things. See, this is a dry run. They started actually back in 2015 when when the Pope came here. If you remember, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, they shut the whole city down when the Pope came here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole city was shut. And check this out. They show you the insanity how these people, again, this was a dry run to try to show how they can cut off black neighborhoods and stuff like that. They use the Pope's visit as the dry run. Because think about it. When you remember when he was here in 215 Ellen Richard, you couldn't use a damn mailbox. They shut every mailbox downtown. I'm like saying to myself, what the hell do a mailbox got to do with the Pope being here? You couldn't find a, I'm serious, man, you could not find an open mailbox in Center City for the life of you back when he was here. And I'm like, and stuff, that's insane. And then you go back to when Wednesday's incident happened on Wednesday. Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, as far up as Allegheny Avenue, they stopped the trains up there. I'm saying to myself, and not only Allegheny, I'm sorry, let me correct myself, up to Logan, up to near Broad Nardi. So I'm saying to myself, why the hell would you stop running trains up there for something that's happened miles away? You know what I mean? It has nothing to do with it. You know what I mean? Whatever this individual was engaged with the police, it has no effect up there. But again, this is what the system does, dry runs. All they use this guy's stuff as not only for a PR firm, for big PR stuff for the police department, like Brother Shamari said, but also, too, is show a dry run in order to show how they keep the black community under check in case they continue with their racism and their violence, because they know a lot of these young people cannot be compromised, like they played a clip with the minister. So they're trying to find ways to show how the communities get out of hand. We can keep these ends in their place, keep them pretty much perimeter around and stuff like that. See, this is how these people think. See, we don't think they think like that, but they do think like that. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, so
It's a lot of things. This man is, like Marcus said, he's very slick and conniving. They think about things like this and stuff, you know? And like you said, like, why would this individual kept being let out of prison and stuff? Now, you know yourself, Elliot, if this brother had did the first of two things to white people, he would have been underneath the jail, because it kept coming back to in his sick mind and stuff. And I got some empathy for it, because I know it's not all his fault in the big sense of the picture, because he's as much the victim of white racism and white supremacy as any of us. He had brothers that went off the rail. But the point being, if he would have did this to the first time for any white people, he would have been done. But because he was kept coming back to the black community, whether it's slinging drugs, guns and whatever he was accused of doing, they threw the book at him then. But because he kept doing it to black people and coming to the black community, that was it. And if he would have just limited his things to just the black community, he would have been able to get out again, because he shot at officers this time, and I'm sure some of those six officers was white. So this is why they're going after him now. We're the people. We got to pay attention to how these people roll. As long as you terrorizing your own community, your own people, the white establishment had no problem with it. And look at this clown, L.A. Richard, Ram McSwain, the U.S. attorney who Trump put in. Now, this filthy bigot had the nerve. No, he's going after Larry Krasner with a vengeance now. Now, he had the audacity to sit there and say he's getting tired of this anti-police rhetoric in these communities around the country, the hate against the police. And I'm saying myself, here's a joke that I didn't hear McSwain, and none of those comment on the racist post that these racist cops said, not only here in Philadelphia, but in other cities and stuff like that. But he tells them he's tired of the hate against law enforcement. We have to pay attention.
Well, and listen, you're right about paying attention to it, because unlike him, for example, I might say, well, I'm tired of, you know, these police with all this, and it don't mean too much. Mm-hmm. But when you have this guy who have the power, see, that's the difference with racism. When this guy has the power to do something about it and say that he's getting tired of this anti-police, what he consider rhetoric, see, they're in a position where they can do something to harm black people.
Oh, sure.
So when he says he's getting tired, then our people need to stand up and take notice. Because, see, we got to come up with strategies to deal with this with Joe. And the some of the strategies fall right back in our laps, man. We got to tighten up our communities. We got to start dealing with these people in the communities that's out of control. We have to.
I agree. We have no choice now because, again, like Brother Shamar was saying, these people are serious about eliminating us and stuff, man. They because if you don't think these people will do it, stuff that they capable of doing it, again, if you know the history of these people and what they have done to other people, and they sit there and think they wouldn't do it to us, you're losing your mind. Because again, the demonic mentality that you're dealing with is something that you can never underestimate and stuff. That's why, it's, like you said, it will behoove us to get ourselves together and start trying to, it's not an individual thing, like you said, Elliot, but for our people as a collective, start dealing with these knuckleheads that's in our communities doing all this crazy stuff and stuff like that, because they don't even know what they're up against. They don't understand the mindset of these people. They're just out here slinging drugs, doing all kinds of crazy stuff, guns and all that. Not understanding these people hate them and hate people that look like them. So, I mean, it will definitely behoove us to do what we have to do. And Elliot, let me say this, two couple more things, I'm gone. Sister Rashida Tlaib, Sister Ola Omar and Alina Presley and AOC, like I said, I love them four sisters because, like I said, they're standing up, and especially my two sisters under attack right now by Israel and Netanyahu and Trump and all them. Because, again, it's clear that they fear them sisters, because what them sisters, because them sisters won't bow down. They cannot be brought. They won't bow down. And Minister Farrakhan encouraged Sister Omar and Sister Ratib and them, don't bow down. Keep standing up for what you believe in. Don't worry about being called anti-Semitic or whatever. Stand up for what's right. And Elliot, I want you and Richard, if y'all able to do so, up tomorrow morning to Rest the Radio, I'm going to blast that weak, spineless congressman of ours in Philadelphia for not having the guts to stand up for these sisters and stuff. And whether they've been attacked by Trump or Netanyahu, this coward has not said a word. But you notice, like I told you, Ellen Richard, he's running. He couldn't keep his mug off the TV. He's everywhere. Since this thing happened on Wednesday, he's been at the news conferences with Kenny, with McNesby, and Bob Casey, Governor Wolf. His face is everywhere. And Dow Clark been attended quite a few of those media outlets and stuff for FaceTime. But it's amazing, these Negroes, they can show up for FaceTime when it's the police being shot at, but when their own people was under siege all the time, whether they're under siege by racist police officers or under siege by these idiots in the neighborhood, you never see these Negroes nowhere. But now all of a sudden you can't keep Dow Clark and Dwight Evans' face out of it. They everywhere. I'm saying, wow, these jokers, it's amazing how these Negroes can show up at everything to get that FaceTime to show white America and on the sly. We some good old Negroes. We gonna make sure that we know that we don't try to think that we anti-cop. We love our police officers and stuff like that, but yet they don't show that same love and concern for black families when a black mother gotta sit there and bury her child, whether it's at the hands of some knucklehead in the community or some racist thug, corrupt cop. I don't see the Dwight Evansons and the Dow Clark showing that same empathy for their own people. Them niggas, they're a disgrace. They make you sick and stuff, man. Are they enough to get your blood pressure if they sickening and stuff, man. And last point, Elliot, on Keith Ellison. Now, what comment did Keith Ellison make as far as that? Because when you and Richard mentioned him, I was commenting on the middle, so I didn't get the whole gist of what he had said.
Well, a couple of things that he had mentioned, and I kind of moved the papers around, that mm-hmm. I kind of focused in on. When he was given the numerical dynamic of those areas
mm-hmm.
And putting the numbers out there so people can understand about that neighborhood where our people dwell at and what was going on. Two of the things me and Richard had talked about was I'll read it because they're just brief paragraphs. Mm-hmm. It says the life expectancy in the Nicetown area is the lowest in the city. Just 63 years old for black men and 74.5 years old for women, compared to the city's average of 72.3 and 79.3 respectively. But in Center City East, which is predominantly white, the life expectancy is 82 years for men and 84.2 years for women. So for white men, in this other neighborhood of Philadelphia, it's 82 years old. But for black men in that predominantly black district, it's 63. They live almost 20 years longer than a black man.
Oh, yeah.
And then he talked about the food disparity by the numbers in those areas. So that's the two that's the two figures that you might have missed.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you – and I'll say these two things I'm off. It's not fair because Brother Shamari played the clip of Al-Hajj Malik Shabazz. We talked about that, about, again – see, Malcolm was, like I said, it's like the brother was it's the stuff Malcolm said back, and he was saying that back in the 60s. You would think Malcolm would have just got rebirthed and stuff, because the stuff is still as relevant today as it was back then. Malcolm said about the food deserts, how the white man purposely making sure that black communities have cheap food, unhealthy, cheap food to eat and everything. Malcolm was saying that on the clip that he played. I mean, this man was such a wise brother, so wise. He didn't even use the term, but I hate to use the term before his time, because what he said is relevant then and it's relevant now and stuff. I mean, about how they, you know, they make sure communities are chaotic, full of drugs and crime ridden and everything, so they could justify turning into a police state. And again, unclean food, ran down schools. I mean, again, this stuff is, like Brother Marcus said, if this is just one neighborhood, you could say, well, that's just an accident. It's no accident, Brother Ellen Richard. And I've been all over the United States, Ellen Richard. Now, again, I don't claim to have been everywhere in the United States. That would be a lie. But I've been to quite a few places. I've been in the black community in Indianapolis, Indiana. And I this is important for the time we can always understand it. This is by design, like Brother Marcus said. I've been to the black community in the hood of Indianapolis. I've been there in Chicago, Houston, Texas, Dallas. And Brother Ellen Richard, if y'all put me back in those places right now and said, Brother Joe, you was in Tioga, in those nice town, I would say, oh, really? I would believe it, because it looks the same. I mean, the same ran-down conditions and stuff like that. I know, because me and my friend Kevin was in Houston, Texas, in the black community. We went down there for the Eagles-Cowboys game down in Dallas back in 2005. Same thing. I said, damn, Kevin, this looks just like North Philly, man. It's like just like the hood down here, man. You seen graffiti. You seen black men look with the sense of hopelessness and despair. You know, ran-down houses, you know, tore-up-looking schools, alleyways with glass and bottles. This is in Houston, Texas now. Same thing in our last point, Ellen and Richard, Indianapolis, Indiana. Same thing. Conditions down in the same way. If you didn't turn around to Indianapolis, Indiana, and said, Joe, you down here in Tioga, you up here in Germantown, I would have believed it, because it looked just the same. Only thing difference is that I just happen to be hundreds of miles away from Philadelphia, but the conditions is just as familiar to me when I was in Indianapolis, Indiana, as I was up here in Philadelphia. And again, this is no accident, man, why these things is like that. And again, I like you, Elliot, this is a reflection on poor misleadership, and that's why we mentioned Keith Ellis. And I hope he has some backbone, and since he's putting these things out, the damn it, do something about it. Don't be a plucky for these Zionists and trash your brother, Minister Farrakhan, who stood by you and backed you, who you broke bread with, stood by you. If you know what the conditions is, when brother, get with like-minded black brothers and sisters in the Congress and stuff, or in the Senate, and stand up and do something for your damn people. Don't be a plucky for Israel, because I'm quite sure the black community in Minnesota didn't elect you to be no stooge for Israel, Brother Ellison. Stand, you're supposed to be a Muslim too. Stand up for your damn people, man.
I'm talking about the Ellison as the host on that's a different. Charles Ellison, not Keith Ellison. Charles.
My bad. I apologize. From Terrestrial Radio. My bad. I got you. Okay, then.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. He didn't. That guy didn't write no articles. Charles Ellison.
Okay. It was Charles. I got you. Okay, I'm gonna talk to Charles too, because me and Charles got a decent relationship. I'm gonna definitely talk to him on Monday about that. But yeah, but bottom line, Brother Ellen Richard, this stuff, y'all got some good information out and stuff. And this thing with Israel, this has got to be dealt with, because I keep trying to say this over and over again. Until we as black men and women of conscious like mind. And so we demanded these Negroes on the city, state, and federal level, we got to get these Negroes the choice. Either you want to represent the interests of black men and women and black children, or damn it, won't you just go ahead and resign your position and get dual citizenship and go over there and be a stooge for Israel. Nobody stop me. If that's what you really want to do, then be a stooge for them. But don't claim to represent black folks, you members of the black caucus, and all you're doing is being a rubber stamp for Israel. We tired of it, especially when we know Israel don't have no damn love for black people with their anti-black, anti-African racist bigots. You got bigoted rabbis over there calling black people monkeys. You got Netanyahu, who's a racist thug, mountain, he's shutting him. I mean, damn it, you can't have it both ways. Do you for us or you for Israel? You can't. If you want to be for Israel, that's fine. But resign your position and stop, you know, playing black folks for stupid and stuff. Like you said, it's an insult to take black children and indoctrinating them with that nonsense about some damn white people being the chosen people of God and stuff like that. That's the part that just irks me to no end and stuff like that. You got Negroes like Elijah come, got these young black children or adults, I should say, think actually buying into that nonsense that some damn European who's agonizing Jew is some chosen people of God when they the damn people, when we the people of the book. I mean, it just irks me to no end, man. You just don't know. It just irks me to no end, man. That brain works because it's dangerous, because it had black men and women growing up with self being full of self-hatred, not having no love for their own people's history and our vibrant things that we have there, and they don't even see their own self in the Bible like that. I already see some Europeans not realizing when they see the thing about the master, the rock that the guy was going to take the rejected stone or whatever like that. They don't even see themselves as that. They see some Europeans, and that's what hurts the most, man. So this stuff has got to end. We have got to demand these Negroes on the city, state, and federal level. Either you for black people or you for Israel. It's one of the two. It's not hard. It's not rocket science. You can't have it both ways. But hey, Brother Ellen and Richard, thank you for your time, brothers.
All right, now. Take it easy.
Have a good night.
Right.
See y'all. Talk to y'all Sunday. Peace.
Richard, let's grab one more before we kind of wind things up. Let's go to 440. 440?
Hello?
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you now.
Oh, how are you two men doing tonight?
Great.
Okay. I just wanted to mention a couple of things. I don't want to take up too much time. I wrote a couple of things down as I was listening to the program here.
Good.
And
when you mention that, you don't necessarily stick to our topics if you want to throw something else in. But go ahead. I don't want to break your train.
Okay. With Garvey, right? You know what I'm saying? You know, Garvey is remembered not just because he was able to. He was black, but he wasn't from America, but it didn't matter to the people at the time. What he did, what he tried to organize with the African Communities League, with just black businesses trying to manifest success from a black foundation. That's why, it's just jealousy of not wanting to see black people after trying to get up after Reconstruction and trying to get up, you know what I'm saying, during Jim Crow and trying to do everything they can to fit into society amidst historical events. J. Edgar Hoover was talking about, you know, the black trying to prevent the rise of a black messiah. You know, a lot of that is just the nature of, like, you know, Garvey is supposed to be like the messiah who comes out of nowhere and like uplifts black people. And it's like, you can see the allegory, but that it's there's a lot of fracturing of black people, a lot of, like, you know, false identities foisted onto black people in the wake of Garvey, if you know what I'm saying. Like, we're not trying to go back to Africa so much, or even like look to Africa. We're on other stuff, and we're watering down our blackness, and we're putting it on the third and fourth burner. This is just another thing that we want to talk about with, you know, I mean, they, you know what I'm saying? It's the nature of our society as black people. I mean, we don't have a tendency to be able to hide or put away our aspirations. And these white folks hear all of us, you know what I'm saying? If you have any gift, any talent, and you're a black person, white people are going to look at you not only because you have talents or gifts or just have, you know what I'm saying, are just really smart, because other black people are paying attention to you. And if you are able to get that many black people's attention, you're a problem. And it's these are just, you know, some of the things that, like, we can't hide our stuff, you know what I'm saying? You got to look at the nuts and bolts of all this, because everything that we do is tracked and, you know, traced and everything. Everything. You know what I'm saying? There's the level of just, like, coverage that black people have on any kind of, like, you talk about strategy, sir. And it's difficult to have a strategy when it's so open that those people here, there, everywhere who would not want black people to fulfill that strategy can use in devices to divide and, you know, dilute black culture and putting other cultures before black people in Africa, going back to Garvey and shit. You know what I'm saying? There's one solution,
Let me mention this, because you was mentioning about strategies and it's hard. You was mentioning about strategies, and it's hard for us to have strategies if, I guess, you know, with the type of mass media that we have, kind of breaking it down to simplest terms. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's not that it's difficult to fulfill. I mean, strategies are by nature broad, and they're not necessarily defined sharply.
Okay,
but,
well,
there's strategies. I mean,
let me say this.
You know, we all know what strategies are.
Let me say this in reference to us and what we have to do to tighten up our game. And when I say us, I'm not talking about all black folks, because I don't think all black folks is going to be involved in any reclamation. It's always going to be a segment. When I say tighten up our strategies and we strategize, and whether it's think tanks or anything that we've discussed in the past, Richard, I'll use other nationalities as an example. When Asians come into these communities, they have a strategy as far as how they want to attack and get black monies in these communities. It's clear that they have a strategy. Would you agree, Richard?
Oh, yeah.
But you don't know anything about it. And there's mass media all around. Do you hear any type of a leak to the press about their strategy?
No.
You don't hear it. We just talked about Jewish folks. It's clear that they have a strategy. Anytime they're using black politicians on every level, whether state, local, or federal, to pick out the best and what they deem is the best and potential brightest in black neighborhoods all over this country and start bringing them to Israel and indoctrinating them as far as anti-Semitism and Holocaust, it's a strategy. Do you know anything about what their strategy is? That's a question.
Are you asking me?
Yes.
I mean, I honestly, I have a clue.
No. I'm not talking about have a clue. I'm talking about Do you know what their strategy is?
Their strategy is cultural cohesion, and that means stimulating a false sense of.
Have they told you it's cultural cohesion? That's your surmising.
Well, they're not gonna tell me it. No.
Well, that's my whole point. Wait a minute. You got to listen to me. I'll let you talk. Yes, but listen to me. That's my whole point. Okay. I don't care whether it's mass media now. We got to develop strategies on how we're going to deal with these situations. We can't worry about mass media. All these other people are developing strategies, and you know nothing about them. I'm not talking about what you surmise or what they're trying to do. You don't know what they're doing until you see it. But they develop strategies before they jump out here and do it, and you have no clue about it. That's what I'm talking about. We can't worry about mass media. What we can do is tighten up our game, because we don't need people that look like us sitting in potential meetings and then going back and tell other people. That's what we have to tighten up our game on. Now, go ahead. I just want to make mention of that, because we can't say that because it's mass media, we can't develop strategies. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. I, okay. I would for a while I was reading online newspapers of what was actually going on the African continent that to help me to further my awareness of what, you know, Africa, you know, everyone who's going, you know, the black people, you know what I'm saying, what we're going through. You know what I'm saying? You know, I speak English. I don't necessarily speak any other language. So I would look for the English speaking countries. So I would just, you know, read and try to just figure out what they're going through. Just if they say anything about historical things like struggles with white imperialism or whatnot, just to have a sense of what was going on. And that's just something that I would encourage other people to do, to actually read what African people are writing. Even though, I mean, it's just an idea, and it might not be from the street level perspective. Again, you have, you know, a lot of people who, you know, imitate European sensibilities in their expressions, but that, you know, you can't, that's almost, you know, to be given in various situations. There's so many people, you know. You know, let me go back to like with Garvey, right? Because it's like, you know, when people talk about black people aren't a monolith, you know, it's true, but in a way it shouldn't be true. Because in all reality, black people should be black. We should try to refine black. If you are black, we should try to maintain that blackness and be able to share it with other black people who then could refine it or maintain it at a level. And when black people say that we aren't a monolith, that goes back into identity politics and cultural, you know, filling up our heads in our lives with things that have nothing to do with black people or Africa. You hear what I'm saying?
Okay.
And it's like that is one of the things that, you know, it's difficult for us to have strategy when we're not thinking. And this goes back to the external fracturing that is going on. They're meddling with black people, literally. They're meddling with us. They can see us, and they can hear us in this very moment. You know what I'm saying? All black people. You know what I'm saying? They can algorithm all this stuff with supercomputers. For real, for real, for real. And you know it's true. They kind of know what black people are kind of about to talk about because they're literally listening to all of us. Not literally with a person, but, and I mean, the computers are just computers. But it is what it is. If you know what I'm trying to say, I'm not trying to give too much power to. But I understand the methods of which things are happening. So I think that we have to be a little bit more aware of that as black people. It's just the media is cool. Mass media is cool. I just, you know, naturally we don't have a mainframe and a server to really do a lot of this shit, and we don't have our encryption game up. You know what I'm saying? But it's, I mean, anytime we speak, it is what it is. Like, with Israel, look, I mean, you got to understand that place is just a moral laundering. You know, that place just represents moral laundering. You know what I'm saying? It's just this place that people can point to and say, it's good and it makes me better. In a real simplified sense, but if you know what I'm saying, you know, if I'm with Israel, I'm good and it makes me better because there's badness around. The history of Israel, I mean, it's real, from a black perspective, it doesn't really matter, but if they're doing, you know, this is it's difficult to feel like me and kind of have a sense of what I know and not be able to express it because, you know, the people I would encounter haven't necessarily read the books. It's real hard to give black people a cliff's notes on, like, geopolitics. If you know what I'm trying to say, it's, like, it's real difficult. And, like, I mean, this is going back to what I've read in some, you know, because I would read news around the world, right? You know what I'm saying? There was a case in Australia where there was this teacher or there was this woman who was like a pedophile, and then she fled to Israel. And I don't know if she's still there or if she got extradited back to Australia. But, I mean, Israel is – I mean, when you talk about culture and what people are trying to do to maintain it, you know, black people are, you know, the salt of the earth. So if Israel, which is not necessarily far from the cleanest, right, it's a mess in my opinion, brings in black young people who are like the salt of the earth, it kind of makes – it goes back to, well, Israel is good. It's all projection with Israel. You know, you have this itty-bitty 8 million people country, Israel, and the United States is just, you know, the media, again, Israel is the best thing since sliced bread, period. hands down. And we know that that's wrong. Like you said with the poll, most black people, at least who would answer the poll or whatnot, you know, would say that Israel, no, you know what I'm saying? That's not what's up. I mean, it is what it is. If you know anything about Israel's role in South African apartheid, you know that. I mean, it's difficult. I mean, Israel's really a small player, but it's the geopolitics and industry and all of this.
Well, let me ask you something before I let you go. You know, according to you, you're a student of geopolitics. What do we do in reference to the poll that was taken that most black folks don't support Israel and believe that Israel has nothing to do as far as the progress of black people, and that they're basically a foreign government that black folks don't support? This is according to the poll. What do we do? Let me finish my question.
Well, you have the right number. What was the percentage of black people who supported Israel? I think there are two different polls.
Yeah, it was two different. I think it was 19% that didn't support Israel, and 17% that 19% that I don't even have that in front of me right now. Most black folks wasn't in favor of Israel.
I'm not trying to.
You know, yeah, but what I'm
not,
saying is this.
I'm
gonna just break it down to. Listen to me. This is the question. I'm gonna just break it down to simplest terms. Most black folks don't support Israel. So yeah. What do you do as a student of geopolitics when you got black elected officials on every level, state, local, and federal, that's supporting Israel? Some of them openly. Some of them clandestinely supporting Israel. What do you do as a student of geopolitics? What do you do as a grassroots person against that type of environment, political environment?
Well, I mean, I guess you have to just, you know, have a way of portraying the person in a way that you have to be able to compare and contrast. You have to have this person in a situation where you're able to compare what's going on and contrasting it to situations. So like you have to compare the clean glass of water to the dirty glass of water, and you have to say, you know, this is dirty, and like, you know,
it's not complicated. What do you do about that political figure, local, national, or statewide?
You have to tailor make it to the particular candidate, but have a general, again, this is where the strategy comes in, has to be tailor made to each candidate, but there has to be a self assembling about why these people, even though that they're black, gotta go, and just like make the case. And it's not that hard. But, however, once again, those of us who would then kind of lean towards it because we are expressing ourselves, you know what I'm saying, we then are you know what I'm saying, we kind of give up. We have to be – you're right when we say we have to tighten up our game. It's just that, you know, and I know it's never going to be everybody, but it's there has to be just a couple little ticks, like three good ticks that you can kind of like – lean that you can put against the people who are obviously, you know, not working in our interest. You know, obviously you could sell out. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's really. I mean, when you're a representative, you have a jurisdiction of you know what I'm saying, 500, 600, 700,000 people. And if more, I mean, you understand what I'm saying? You represent more people than many countries. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Thank you for your contribution, brother. I understand what you're saying. Go ahead. You want to say something, Richard?
I just wanted to ask, and I'm addressing the point out because I think it's an important point both that you raised about strategy and what we want to do. But I'm going to pose it as strategy and secret. I think that the four things that I'm a believer. The unification process will only come because we are fractured and we have to become whole until we have a structure, infrastructure. So I ask us to look at the 1831 Negro Convention of 1831 to learn, to get what lessons we get out of that.
those were structures that were created in the 1830s, which strategies were developed. I would ask us to look at the National Equal Rights League of the 1870s, too, because that was a structure. And the reason why I'm pointing to structures were different, because it's we have these different fragments, and Brother, you raised that we do have these different fragments, and the question about looking at the leadership, but also being able to pull together these different fractures in order to create strategy. And the strategy has to be something that, as you say, is a higher ideal that everybody is directed towards. And then I would say, look at the 1920 with the UNIA. And I emphasize the UNIA because it wasn't just Garvey might have been the figure, the leadership of and of the that actually marshaled it, but there was other men and women who actually made that convention that was global at that point. I mean, Africans from all over and the Caribbean came together to create strategy and definition, that higher ideal. And I will also ask us to look at the National Black Political Convention of 1972. So when we look at those conventions, those structures that you can see span from 1830 to 1972, then you look at what Black people can do that creates structures that deals with not just local strategizing and political power, because those were political and structures, but also when you speak about geopolitical, because that's what I liked about the 1920 convention, because it becomes geopolitical, because the continent became a part. And as they came out the definition of what it was to be a global African. So everybody all over, Africans all over the world, even though they come out of different experiences out of that, they still recognize that they were a part of that. Now, that's what I would ask us to look into, that in relationship to being centered to ourselves. We ain't got to look at the Jews' experience. We ain't got to look at the Irish experience, the English experience. We can look at our experience of how did we come together, having different points of view, utilizing that mechanism and come up with strategies. And when you come up with secrets, I would ask us to look at, is this person I'm just becoming aware of, but Abraham Galloway, who comes out of the 1800s, because it's now becoming more understood that those men and women that led up to the Civil War had a clandestine organization, call it a spy network, that actually assisted the Union troops. And people would know, what's her name, Harriet Tubman, being the most celebrated, which they give us. But there were other men and women of this network that we don't even know about that were secret. So when we talk about keeping secrets, you know, they obviously were able to develop secrets, gather information, go across enemy lines, keep quiet unto themselves, and be able to not win the war between the North and South, but win the war of Black liberation. Right. So I would ask us to look at Abraham Galloway, and a person that you can YouTube to who talks about that kind of network is a Harry Jones, which he did just pass away a couple of years ago, but he has something. So if you look up Harry Jones, and then you'll hear him speak about Abraham Galloway. So that is what I would suggest us to look at. And then when we dialogue, the question now, as we look in the 21st and 22nd century, what is missing? What is missing that we need to incorporate in a structure, one, to deal with the question that raised Elliot, dealing with the centers, What was missing in any of those organizational structures? Because Garvey had the centers, mm-hmm. had people plants, the National Black Political Conference, which came about the same year that the Congressional Black Caucus, who aligned with the, instead of aligning with the National Black Political Convention's output of bringing together all the people, they aligned with Israel. And that's broke down. That what was the center of the national the Equal Rights League, which broke down because the NAACP, which some of the members were against supporting a white organization dealing with civil rights in the 1870s and moving into the turn of the century. And what was wrong? What was the structural challenge in the national and the Negro, Negro conventions, where there was discussion, didn't pass, but there was discussion of whether we should include white people within in that deliberation. They didn't win, but that was a discussion. So we need to look at those structures and ask that critical question, because those two questions that you raised, three, what do we do with the centers? How do we create strategy within ourselves that we can be able to keep to ourselves and stay focused on ourselves? And how do we create a clandestine, invisible network that works to our best interests that we might not even know exists, that exists? Those are the questions that we need to can bounce around, but we need to be informed of those histories and those structures.
I just have one thing to say, now I'll leave the line. You said there was the one conference in 1831. What was that again?
They called it the Negro Conventions or the Colored Conventions.
Okay, Negro or Colored Conventions. Conventions,
1831? Right. Yes. And if you go to the Time for Awakening page, I believe it was posted. I don't know. Earlier that, but if you go to the Time for Awakening Facebook page, you'll see the link of that, because in somebody they posted, there's an organization that is actually posting the deliberations from that convention.
Okay, 1831.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, sir. I hope you too have a blessed and peaceful evening.
Hey, thank you for your input, brother.
Thank you, man.
He raised some interesting topics, Richard, about things necessary to be secret, and I agree with him. But I think that we got to tighten up. The whole game has to be tightened up.
Yeah, definitely.
Because just like you said, and I didn't even throw that into the mix, about the spy network that was brought into being. Mm-hmm. It's necessary now that we have, because listen, these other groups have spy network and they have them among our people.
Right.
And some of us don't even, I think we realize it, but we kind of take it for granted. Or just figure it's not harmful or it don't really exist. It's hard to really put it in words.
Right.
But it's clear that these other groups have spy network and they have them among our people.
Right. And those, like those people that you talk about that's within our community that are detrimental to our community, they have networks. They have. That's why this whole thing of snitching becomes a popular thing, because their network is saying, they're educating their network, don't snitch. When they're at the point of being a part of creating those statistics that are dealing with the quality of life.
A life, yeah.
I mean, those statistics are saying we're dying in compared to other people. You don't have to kill us all. You can have slow death. So you poison us. You starve us. You scramble our brains. You disorientate us. You're still dying. You just ain't being shot with a bullet and dying in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And they're saying, we're going to show you the numbers. See how long they live. See how long you live. And y'all in the same space. How is that?
Yeah, we got to develop strategies where we can counteract this, man. This stuff that has affected our communities, and especially now with the advent of this this wet that they're dealing with in the communities.
Oh, yeah.
This K2, this synthetic mm-hmm. marijuana, mm-hmm. this stuff that mm-hmm. has infected our community that we don't produce.
Right.
That other people have introduced into these communities that our children and adults are fooling around with is affecting the brains of our people. It's clear that it is, Richard. Mm-hmm. It's clear that it is. Mm-hmm. Affecting our brains in a negative fashion. It's leaving your mind open for negative thoughts and detrimental thoughts, where you don't have any care for young adults or old. You'll do anything out here. This stuff is, and our people don't even know the effects of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But they're smoking it, and they're consuming it.
For generations.
We got to stop this, and we can do it. Other nationalities have done it. They have done it under different circumstances, but they've done it. Mm-hmm. When the Asians realized what the Europeans were doing in their country in regards to that hashish and all, they mm-hmm. rallied around, kicked Europeans out, and then made a Marshall Plan to rid their community of these drugs.
The opium wars and
exactly. Now they were under different circumstances because they controlled their nation. And they were able to do that because they controlled the government. Mm. Here I would like to add,
because I think the brother raised the other point about control, and they control their culture.
That's exactly.
Because you have to control the behavior and the beliefs of your own people in order to be able to control those other things.
And that's why it's necessary to reinstate a lot of these values that you're talking about. We have to remember about our ancestors and what they were trying to accomplish, even while they were here, the early stages of why they were here. Mm-hmm. Because they were still closer to vestiges of our own culture than we are now. So we have to look back at the things that they were trying to accomplish and use that as a template.
I agree.
Yeah, those are interesting comments that he raised.
Oh yeah,
I think that, and maybe I misunderstood him, and he'll call back eventually, you know, in other programs. I kind of got that he was saying that we can't really develop solid structures because of the advent of media and
right.
and people listening, but we can't really worry about that, even on this medium. We can put the information out there about what's going on and, you know, what these politicians are doing. Black ones, I'm not worried. I heard on, I was listening to Sharpton the other day, and this brother called up and was talking about black politicians in Detroit and what they're not doing. And then Sharpton asked the caller, he said, what nationality is the mayor of Detroit? And he mentioned this is a white guy. And he mentioned his name. The name escapes me. And he said, well, what do you have to say about him? You criticizing black elected officials. What about him? And then the caller was trying to explain, but then he got ushered off the air. But I'll try to answer for him. We can't be concerned about these white politicians on any level because we already know what they're about. Their track record have shown what they're about. I'm not concerned about necessarily about Trump's statements or attitudes towards black people. It's clear that's nothing new. The man's a racist, and he's been one. The thing that we need to be concerned about is what we need to do, what we have to do. And if you got people among us that have sided with the enemies of our people, that work behind the scenes with enemies of our people, then they have to be outed. And we have to do something about them because they're laying a wound to our people. We have to do something about them. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is an ongoing, interesting discussion that's going to be had until, you know. And the good thing about it, Richard, is in every city where we are, and not only cities, areas where we are, you have people developing strategies to do something about this. You do. Mm-hmm. Now, whether they're drawing an audience is another story. But it's people out there that's trying to do something about this and developing strategies to do something about this. The good thing about what we do is when we find these people, we try to showcase them. Let our people know that it ain't all about, well, it's me and our people ain't doing anything, because some of our people believe that. We have our people out there that are doing something. It's a percentage, and I believe that that's what's going to turn things around anyway, is a percentage. But we do have our people that's doing something about it and trying to develop strategies. What we need to do is the strategies that might seem to work for our communities, let's get on board and try to push it. When we met those brothers that was pushing these independent black political parties, developing independent black political schools, developing planks and platforms for independent party, which is an excellent move, then we try to push it and develop that concept among other areas. Because that will work if employed. And we can see that this stuff we've been doing, fooling around with Democrat and Republican politics as it's operated here in this country, don't work for us.
Exactly.
So, you know, that looks like it's it for today, Richard. I guess we're going to continue this conversation or other conversations in future programs, but look like we didn't hit the end of the road for the night. I want to, you know what? A brother Otis, our caller from Newport News, put in the chat room that he tried to listen to Warren Valentine, but he was unable to hear it. Again, Warren Valentine, and his show usually comes on at 10 o'clock. We ran a little over, so his show will be played at 11 o'clock this evening. And you can hear Warren Valentine by tuning in the same way that you hear our program. You can go to the website, Time for an Awakening. You can go to TuneIn and type in Time for Awakening, or you can go to the Black Talk Radio Network and hit the / Time for an Awakening, and you'll be able to hear Warren Valentine. And that's for our caller out of Newport News that said that he was unable to hear him, and he thought he was doing something wrong. If you just go to those three entities, you'll be able to hear Warren Valentine's program tonight at 11 o'clock. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, and it was a lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Such a small part of
Why can't we do something to try and solve them?
To save the children.